This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 5:06 and this is the evening edition with Sharmila and Lynn. So we're going to be talking now about this question of vaccines, given that they've actually landed on our shores, whether the fact that we can soon be vaccinated should be made mandatory to actually allow us to travel. In short, the question of vaccine passports or vaccine certifications, as well as what the feasibility is of implementing such a system. And this is coming on the wake of Transport Minister Dato' Sri Wee Ka-siong saying that a universal certification may be issued to those who have been vaccinated to ease travel restrictions as well as to revive the aviation sector for now within the Southeast Asian region.
Yeah, so it's yet to be discussed. It's going to be with the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. And the idea would be for a code or certificate of sorts to be accepted by neighbouring countries. And then, of course, when you arrive via the airports, to follow the country's SOPs. Predictably, MATA, the Malaysian Association of Tour and Travel Agents, of course, supports the idea, with its president, Datuk Tan Kok Liang, basically saying that a vaccine passport or a certificate would be a good start to boost the travel industry in the short and medium term. But also discusses the need, and I understand this, for reciprocated agreements, right, with other countries. So it's not just so that essentially we can travel back and forth and you're able to see that to and fro of tourism rather than it all going in one way. He also said that vaccinations should not be made mandatory for travellers. So instead, it's a good start. His argument against making it mandatory is that certain groups such as children, for example, simply can't be vaccinated.
And of course, the idea of vaccine passports isn't really new, right? They've already existed for other diseases like yellow fever, for instance. In West Africa, you actually have to carry a card with you that indicates that you've taken the yellow fever vaccine. Many countries, including Ghana, require proof of this vaccine and won't let you enter the country without it. And, you know, other countries for different measures, for instance, BCG is something that's a requirement for if you're from certain countries and you want to go to, say, America. But on the other hand, as with most things, a black market in fake COVID test documents are already springing up as this becomes a possibility when we move towards vaccine rollout.
Yeah, and in terms of, this is on a country level, right? But as we heard earlier, the Transport Ministry is looking at reviving the aviation industry. And if we look at what private sector initiatives are doing, Qantas Airways, Korean Air are considering making it compulsory for international passengers to be vaccinated. So I don't know. I don't know what the consensus is going to be on this. I think that we can all agree that vaccinations before travel, or vaccinations as a part of the battery of things that you need to do before you're able to travel again, is definitely a good idea. If nothing else, on a consumer level, it gives a lot of confidence to you, right? The idea is that I've done everything that I can to be as safe as possible, as responsible as possible as I travel. At this point, I think many of us have not been away for a long time. And I think that considering the uncertainties that we've been seeing with countries going into lockdown, with, you know, just the vagaries of travel, with barriers and borders closing up, everyone wants to do it in as safe and as consistent a way as possible. And vaccinations are certainly a part of that.
Yeah, whereas though, I think that one of the things with COVID-19 is that because it's as widespread as it is, and because of the relative inequality in terms of who has access to vaccines, how the rollout is happening, different countries will have different requirements. So definitely that idea of, in concept, a vaccination passport could work, but in practice, is it really something that would help? Especially if different countries are going to be prioritizing different things, what happens when borders open and everyone starts going back and forth? So this is something that we will be talking about soon with our guest, Professor Dato' Dr. Awang Bulgiba Awang Mahmud, who is a public health medicine specialist at University Malaya. But in the meantime, let us know, do you think COVID-19 vaccinations need to be made mandatory for traveling? And once you get vaccinated, do you plan to travel? You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Bodacious, fabulous minds. BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 5:12, and this is the evening edition with Sharmila and Lynn. We are talking about the concept of mandatory COVID vaccinations for travel, the issuing of a vaccination passport. So let us know, do you think COVID-19 vaccinations need to be made mandatory before we can travel? And once you get vaccinated, do you plan to travel immediately? Is that something you're looking forward to? Assuming, of course, that borders are open. You can call us, 7733-2900. WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. We are now crossing over to Prof. Dato' Dr. Awang Bulgiba Awang Mahmud, who is a public health medicine specialist at University Malaya. Prof, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
So to start off with, what are your thoughts on this proposal to introduce a vaccination certificate as a way to kickstart travel within the Southeast Asian region?
I give it some thought. You know, this is a very difficult question to answer. On the face of it, as far as epidemiology is concerned, public health, it seems like a good idea. But in reality, there are a lot of considerations, I think, that you have to take care of if you are even contemplating such a passport. For example, you're talking about the sovereignty of nations. So the fact that some nations will say that this has never been a part of international travel agreements, that you require such a passport, that's different for yellow fever, for example. That's been accepted, that you need a yellow fever passport before you can enter what is classified as a yellow fever zone. So you are talking about not just sovereignty of nations. Of course, you're talking about individual rights. So here, lah. And you have to set up a system which is acceptable, which is trustworthy, and in which you can vouch for the effectiveness in the light of potential new variants. And this, I'm talking about as an epidemiologist. We're already seeing issues here. And you have to remember that not all vaccines have been accepted as being equivalent across countries. So you can have a vaccine, for example, which is produced by Cuba. And by the way, Cuba does produce a lot of vaccines, which is not registered nor approved for use in other countries. Of course, they have a lot of problems with the US sanctions and all that. But there's no saying that it's not effective. So it could be effective, but it's just that it's not registered. So how can you reciprocate when saying that, okay, we accept that your vaccine is effective enough and so on. And you've already seen moves by South Africa, for example. The Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine has been stopped in South Africa, its deployment, simply because it has proven to have some... There's some doubts about its effectiveness lah, with the new variants, the 501Y V2, otherwise known as the B13351 variant. So you have that issue. So if a developed country's vaccine is not really proven to be effective, can you imagine if a vaccine which is produced by Thailand, for example, or by Vietnam, are you going to say that, okay, we accept that your vaccine is effective enough, so we'll recognize your certificate? So I think... And of course, you must remember again that many developed countries have simply bought up more than half the world supply of vaccines. We know this, right? So developing countries are already at the back of the queue. And it's going to take them some time to be able to vaccinate until they reach a herd immunity in their country. So I don't know whether this is going to be discriminatory against those countries, because without the ability to travel, the developing countries will be at a great disadvantage. So you there's so many things that you got to think of. So I don't know. At this point, I think you have to give it a lot of considerations, because really, there are a lot of things that you have to think about.
And right. Putting aside the issue of vaccinations for a while, which, right, as you rightly point out, is a knotty and difficult one, right, what are some of the measures that need to be put into place to enable safe travel?
Right. Okay. Aside from vaccinations, assuming that you want to set up a travel bubble between two countries where you're confident that the you know, vaccinations can be accepted and so on. You would have to set up certain SOPs in place to ensure that your healthcare needs are taken care of. So, for example, if you cross over to another country and then that country, and you fall sick in the country, I mean, God forbid, no, you fall sick in that country, but you will have equivalent healthcare because of COVID and all that. Or there's some mechanism for you to return to your home country to seek care where you'll be taken care of. And then you need, this is a controversial idea. The fact is there are lots of rapid test kits now, which test for antigen. We're not talking about antibodies, right? If people get vaccinated, then they're likely to have antibody positive anyway. So that's not the point of testing. But there are rapid antigen tests now, either through breath, saliva, you know, deep throat saliva, or something similar, which can produce results within, say, 30 to 40 minutes. So on arrival, if you could have that kind of arrangement, then it may be possible for you to arrange a travel bubble between like-minded countries. So perhaps you have to start small. I don't think we can do this on a large scale anyway. You know, I'm sure a lot of people miss traveling, right? We have not been really being able to travel. And this is, it's not good for the economy either. No, it's not good for studies. It's not good for the economy. It's not good for a lot of things, right?
In terms of, you mentioned starting small.
Right.
What about local? What about domestic tourism? Is there a way that this can happen safely? Particularly since when we did have traveling between states, we saw quite a few interstate clusters break out.
Okay. Now, I had a committee called the Independent COVID-19 Vaccination Advisory Committee, which is, we are appointed by MOSTI, so we offer independent advice to the government, and we did suggest to the government that rather than have the Ministry of Health recommendation of 60% coverage, we should go for 80% coverage. So thankfully, the government has accepted that. Now we realize that NPIs, you know, non-pharmaceutical interventions, need to be in place, despite vaccines. So if we recompute this and we say that we have reached a certain threshold of vaccination with NPIs in place, which will reduce contact rates between people and so on, I think domestic tourism will be quite safe. Provided, this is the caveat, provided no new variants come in. So if international borders still remain closed, or you control them to in such a way that we are confident that no new variants come in, which cannot be addressed by the vaccines that we have, the domestic tourism can be restarted quite safely, right? Because new variants are a worry for people like me. Now, last week I read a release by NERVTECH. NERVTECH keeps track of the studies which have to do with mutations in the UK. And the UK is one of those countries which does a lot of genomic sequencing. UK, Denmark, and Iceland, nobody else comes close to the amount of genome sequencing they do. Now, the B117 variant, which is now spreading in the UK, has proven to be more virulent. That means it kills more people, causes more severe disease than the previous variant. So we don't want that kind of variant coming in, because then if the vaccines don't really work, we're going to have an even bigger problem, right? So if international tourism is strictly controlled, but domestic tourism can be kickstarted, and that I think will be a good thing for the economy.
So, Prof, I think earlier you mentioned, and I just want to return to this a little bit, the difficulties in ensuring that access to travel is going to be safe and also equitable, right, considering the issues with vaccine distribution that we are seeing. So on a global community level, I think there is absolutely an interest in reviving the industry, because worldwide countries are struggling with this. What sorts of joint measures do there need to be to restart tourism and travel from your point of view?
Like I said, now, if you start small with a green bubble, with a travel bubble between certain countries where both countries have reached a certain level of herd immunity, so you've got to watch your data very carefully. If the data is made available to us, then we can say, okay, herd immunity has been assured here, level of infections have come down very low, such that it is unlikely to have an explosion. So then we can do this kind of arrangement. Then once other countries have reached the same level of herd immunity, which you think we make it safe for you to open up, then I think we can do that. The good thing about Southeast Asia is that Indonesia has already started vaccinating. So has Singapore. In fact, Singapore has started ahead of everybody else. We are starting soon. So is Thailand and Vietnam. I'm pretty sure Brunei will start very soon. But their level of cases are actually very, very low. So they can delay if they wish to. And the other countries probably will do so. I think the Philippines trying to sort out some of their issues that they have with vaccines, from what I read from the Philippine Inquirer. So if we start with Malaysia, Singapore, and Thailand kind of thing, so we can do this, and then perhaps later we can expand to Indonesia. But we have to watch the data very carefully, you know. So if the data shows and convinces people like me that herd immunity has been achieved to some extent, then we'll probably recommend that, yeah, you know, you can do this kind of thing, yeah.
And what about when it comes back to the personal level? How do we as individuals determine when it's safe again for us to travel?
I personally will watch the data very carefully, right? If no, because let's say that domestic tourism you allow and you open up and interstate travel is allowed, and then there does not appear to be any new cluster happening. You know, maybe there are some sporadic cases, but that's because maybe not everybody has been vaccinated. After all, the vaccination program will probably take a year or so. And if you want to include the our migrant population, that's going to take more than a year, surely, because we don't even know how many there are. Right. So, but if we open it up, say once you reach about 50-60% of the population being vaccinated, which is actually quite a good level, and NPIs remain in place, no new clusters of infections appear to have developed because of interstate travel. I think personally, I would say it's getting quite safe to travel. You don't need to reach 80% of the population being immunized for it to be really safe. By the time you reach 80%, I think some of the pharmaceutical companies will have completed trials in children. So be able to vaccinate children anyway. But we've told the government, okay, if you can't vaccinate children, vaccinate the teachers first, because they will ring fence the children and make sure the children don't get infected. That's what we told the government in December anyway. So we were hoping that please listen, you know, do something. Right. So, I hope they're listening anyway. But there's some indication that they might vaccinate teachers early on, because I've been harping about this also in the media, that, you know, these are one of the recommendations that we made about the special groups. Yeah.
Prof, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, you're welcome.
Okay. That was Professor Datuk Dr. Awang Bulgiba Awang Mahmud, who is a public health medicine specialist at University Malaya. Tell us what you think about this idea of COVID-19 vaccinations, a COVID-19 passport before you can travel. And once you do get that vaccine, you know, do you intend to travel? What are the things that you're thinking about? Do you have concerns? You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.